So I'm very pleased to welcome Jill Phillips, who is the in-house Director of Editorial Legal Services for the Guardian News Media Limited Group. I thought it would be a good idea to have the opposite viewpoint. I would like Jill to speak, and obviously if people have questions for her, please do, and then I will just add some closing remarks at the end.
Thank you, Alison. I mean, I've sat here and I've thought, where am I possibly going to start with everything that I've heard? It is a bit like being in the lion's den, and I feel like I'm in a sort of lonely place. I don't know that I've heard many voices that really reflect what I feel on the coalface at the moment in terms of the work that I do on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, I'm speaking from the Guardian's perspective in that place, which is, you know, probably in terms of something I heard earlier, the good side rather than the bad side. I've heard people suggesting curtailments and restrictions on almost every aspect of what I would regard as things that we need to enable us to do the job that we try to do. I'm going to try and run through some of the things that worry me, some of which you've mentioned, but I'm going to try and just give you my perspective on those areas and why I think they're worrying. And please also accept that I'm not here as an advocate for the Daily Mail or the abuses or I think some of the things that Hugh described as a vicious or outrageous campaign of misinformation. I will do my best not to be either. So these are my personal views from the coalface. There are many aftershocks from Leveson that are having an effect on the media landscape, and in no particular order. Most recently, for example, ACPO has published new guidelines on, she says, neutrally anonymous arrests, under which forces are going to be banned from confirming the names of suspects. Now, Leveson dealt briefly with this in his report, and he quotes the views of Andy Trotter and Bernard Hogan Howe, arising principally from one case, the Chris Jeffries case, which is one of those cases where I would, you know, caveat that hard cases don't make good law. Chris Jeffries, when you look at it, had a whole gamut of legal remedies available to him, accepting that what was done was not right. He had remedies in defamation and privacy, as well as the law of contempt. And it was, as I recall it, Avon and Somerset police who were briefing against him off the record. So this is a complex area. Given that contempt legislation bites on arrest, and that Section 3 has a defence of not knowing and having no reason to suspect, it's interesting to think how that's going to play out if you have anonymous arrests. I also think it's interesting to put into the equation the fact that some people, for example, Neil Wallace, like him or not, had almost 2 years on arrest. Now, if he hadn't been named, he would be sitting with that suspicion and there would be a burden on him as to whether he was the one who revealed it or not. So I think that there's some really complicated issues that flow into just that one topic. Moving on to other aftershocks, data protection. As we've heard, Leveson proposes some potentially quite drastic changes to the Data Protection Act regime, which I believe could have a significant impact on journalists' ability to carry out pre-publication investigations. Now, there are a number of suggestions made in the report, narrowing the ambit of the journalistic exception in Section 32, clarifying the law regard to the availability of compensation under Section 13, and the repeal of certain procedural provisions with special application to journalists in sections 32 and 44 to 46. The big one, of course, is the suggestion, which a lot of people have all, and I think to be fair, just diverting, that there's been a lot of criticism of the Information Commissioner today. But the Information Commissioner has been advocating for a long time that there should be custodial sentences for Data Protection Act breaches. The suggestion is that Section 77 should come into play in conjunction with Section 78, which is the enhanced defence for public interest journalism. And I would just remind people that, you know, that the European Court, in I think a case called Campana, someone will know it better than me, said this about sentences. Although sentencing is in principle a matter for the national court, the court considers that the imposition of a prison sentence for a press offence will be compatible with journalist freedom, won't be compatible with journalist freedom of expression as guaranteed by Article 10 of the Convention, except in exceptional circumstances, notably where other fundamental rights have been seriously impaired. And then it gives these examples: in the case of hate speech or incitement to violence, because such a sanction will by its very nature have a chilling effect. So I just throw that into the mix in terms of, you know, where we go with this. There's some comfort in the reasonable belief defence, but I think you have to also bear in mind that if another of the Leveson recommendations is brought into play, which is the removal of the words "with a view to publication," that defence may well be really quite seriously constrained in how it would work in practice. Various suggestions have been made about the role of the ICO. The ICO has expressed recently some reluctance because he regards these suggestions as moving him much closer to becoming, quotes, a mainstream statutory press regulator. And I think we have to be careful here about how many people are going to end up regulating the press. And, of course, just to throw into the mix, there's a draft European data protection regulation currently being considered by the European Parliament. So there's a lot of things on data protection going on at the moment. And I think, again, there is a need for a pause to let all these things settle down so that you see where they all are going to fit in to the jigsaw. Otherwise, you're going to end up doing something here that's going to have an unforeseen consequence over there. Another aftershock, PACE. We've heard a bit about that, and we've heard a bit about the background as to why changes have been made. I mean, this seems to be a purely metropolitan police-driven issue, that they want to weaken protection for journalists from police searches. And I would caution you to be very careful about buying into something like that. I mean, the new proposals are apparently open to consultation, although I haven't actually seen the consultation. And as far as I could determine, this was hidden away in some Home Office library. So quite when it's going to be properly discussed, I don't know. But for me, protecting sources, which is where these changes to PACE potentially go, is one of the most fundamental things. And I would say that it's better to err on the side of caution where you're talking about sources than to try to narrow too much the protections that there are. Don't forget that the police are the state, and they don't tend to distinguish between good journalists and bad journalists. I mean, just look at the time Amelia Hill had. You know, they were bugging phones, they were videoing phone boxes. Sally Moora is another example of where the state can go in these cases. So, again, changes to PACE, I think, are very worrying, and we need to keep a good eye on them. Another thing that has been discussed, which I'll just pick up on here, is internal procedures and the pros and cons of audit trails. I mean, I think this is really difficult. I mean, within The Guardian, we've moved from, in the last year, looking at having a sort of great big long form that we get people to fill in when they're doing subterfuge, when they're doing anything that might invade someone's privacy, where we're using anonymous sources. And I suddenly thought, this is all disclosable. We're going to get sued, and our thought process is all being written down here. It may not be privileged, and Leveson clearly had some concerns, I think, about the role of in-house lawyers and whether they should be protected. I don't think he was that impressed with some of my colleagues. So where we've gone now is the complete opposite. We've produced a single sheet of paper that records a date, a time, and the names of the people who took part in a discussion. And that's it. Because we want a record. We appreciate that we need a record. But actually, do we want to show our workings as to how we got to deciding that there was a public interest, or what we discarded or what we didn't? I think actually, it's, from our perspective, it's quite dangerous. And so, you know, audit trails are really tricky in terms of disclosure issues and what people are going to drag out and what they're going to try and, you know, and it may not just be used in a PCC regulatory sense. It may be used against you in a libel action or something else, because people are going to know that you've got all these audit trails. And once they know you've got them, they search for them and they ask for them to be disclosed. So again, there's some really complicated practical issues sort of lurking in that area. On press regulation, as things stand. It's a mess. I sort of despair, really, when I've seen what's been going on. I haven't got time to talk about whether, you know, whether this is statutory underpinning or not. It's, on one level, it's become completely irrelevant. It is fair to say that the recognition criteria are alienating the industry at a theoretical level, and they prompted them to reject them rather than work together with them. And I think there is a need. I think someone else suggested that there be a pause and that everybody sits down around a table and now looks at the detail of what is being suggested to see how it's going to work in practice. Exemplary damages, I personally disagree with Hugh Tomlinson, and I think that they will at some point fall foul in Strasbourg, and it might take a while. I know some newspaper organisations are thinking about JRing either the draft bill or the bill when it comes in. I think it was done on the digital economy bill. There was a JR before it reached the statute books. I don't know. Or they may wait, and you know, in 10 years' time when the first one arrives. I think it's a chilling and a theoretical issue, exemplary damage, than a practical issue for most of us on my side of the park. Costs, I've got much more concern about, because I think the costs clause is not Leveson. Leveson suggests that it's a matter for discretion in the courts, which I'm happy with. I'm a lawyer. I may not always like the decisions I get, but I trust judges ultimately. That's what our democratic system's about, it seems to be. Whereas the clause that's been put before Parliament goes way beyond that. It's a statutory thing. It's making it mandatory. There's no discretion in any of it. And for some reason, certainly the last draft I saw, is trying to build in some protection for conditional fee agreements, which I thought the Strasbourg had ruled out. So, you know, I think the cost thing is a complete mess. And also, when I look at the drafting of the clauses, it seems to me that there's a lack of parity between the protection that's been given to a defendant and the protection that's been given to a claimant in the way that the clauses are worded. So again, I just think that there is, you know, I suspect it's too late. I suspect all these things are going to happen because apparently there is no way to discuss these things, which is bizarre in a democracy. But I tell you, where it seems to leave us is this. These things are all built round there being an approved regulator. If there is no approved regulator, then nobody can choose to join it, so none of those clauses have any effect. And I suspect that the industry at the moment is seriously discussing setting up its own scheme that it won't put for approval, and it'll just go ahead and give it a go. And at some point, there'll be some sort of head-on collision. The government will have to at some point say, well, we're going to impose a statutory regulator, or they're going to have to say, okay, we're going to let this voluntary system go on without recognition. And the only way to solve that is to try and sit down around a table now and see if both sides can be made to see some sense. So, you know, that's where I see the regulatory issue at the moment. I can't go into all the 47 Leveson recommendations, you'll be pleased to know. Safe to say that, you know, I think there's been some unfair press from some aspects on this, and that, you know, the Delaunay breakfast, so-called, at that breakfast, by far and away, the majority of those 47 recommendations were accepted by the press. Sanctions of £1 million, all that was never an issue. What there are at the moment are some outstanding concerns, particularly around third-party complaints, which is recommendation 11, I think, which really goes back to the issues on partiality and opinion. And, you know, I mean, from the Guardian's perspective, we have a real serious problem with SIFWatch and the Jewish lobby on a lot of what we write. And, you know, it can completely snow us under and stop us functioning on one level. It can take four or five people out of things for days. And you do need to be careful about where you draw the lines on these sorts of issues. There are issues around who owns the code, who's going to draft it, who's going to be responsible for it. There are issues around the arbitration scheme. And the great shame about the arbitration scheme at the moment is that there hasn't really been any proper discussion about how that might work in practice. I think there are two real genuine concerns from the industry side. The regions are really worried that they're going to get flooded with people who are going to put top-end accuracy, privacy and harassment claims that would otherwise normally be code complaints into the arbitration system because they're going to be able to get damages. And if you've got a completely free system that they don't have to pay for, why would they not do that? And the regions, you know, don't have a lot of complaints when it comes down to it, and they're really serious. It's a serious worry for them. Now, it may be that in 2 years' time, that's all dealt with and a line of authority comes out, but you've got to recognise that for that period, something needs to be put in place to enable a proper process to be developed. And whether you have a pilot scheme or you have a small fee that people have to pay to start, or you have some sort of sift that's done, these are things that really need to be considered. So I think that, you know, the funding of that scheme also is something that, again, has to be discussed and sorted out. So that's the regulatory stuff. In terms of sort of wider media issues, plurality and convergence, I think we're all worried about where they're going. I think there are two EU consultations on plurality issues at the moment. There's one on media freedom and pluralism and one on audiovisual media regulatory independence. There's a select committee on plurality calling for evidence at the moment. So there's a whole lot of stuff going on in Europe in the bigger sense on plurality that we still need to keep our eye on. Over here in the UK, we've got the Defamation Bill, which again we've touched on. That's back in the House of Commons on Thursday next week, I think, but it's then going to ping-pong back to the House of Lords Tuesday. Thank you. There are some bits of it that are liberalising, I think. Some bits of it are just reflecting where we've got to. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the new public interest defence. There's a whole host of other things that I can mention that are going on that we have to try to keep our eye on. And Andrew's thing about whether we'd missed a sort of slot on the Bribery Act. I mean, when you see the number of things that we're trying to consult, be involved in, keep an eye on, there's masses of them. And actually, the Newspaper Society did put some information into the what was then called the Corruption Bill or something. But just a list of other things to throw into the pot. In addition to the approved regulator costs, there are a series of more wide-ranging and generally applicable civil costs reforms coming in through Jackson. It's not entirely clear how all that's going to feed back into publication cases. There's a contempt consultation going on at the moment. There's a whole new coroner's regime about to come into play, where the coroner is consulting on various issues about access reporting. Family courts are also doing a similar process. We've got an issue on reporting criminal courts post the Guardian and Westminster Magistrates Court case, where the criminal judges are trying to backtrack on that very helpful, we would say, decision from the Court of Appeal. You've got the government plans for secret courts. You've got the Communications Data Bill, where they're going to try to just be able to get hold of data. And, of course, the problem on sources is that data, irrespective of content, data can itself reveal a source. You don't need to know the content. If you know that X spoke to Y, then you may be revealing a source. So there's some real concerns around that. And so to conclude, you know, there's an awful lot of threats and problems that I see day to day. You know, when I started 25 years ago as a media lawyer, although there was no such thing as a media lawyer, I was a litigation lawyer. That's what I started off as. You did a bit of defamation and a bit of contempt, and that was about it. You didn't know how to spell privacy. Data protection was, thank goodness, not there at all. And crime was something you just did not conceive of. It just wasn't there. It wasn't a problem. Nowadays, you know, there's a whole raft. I mean, I'm trying to jot down Bribery Act, Data Protection Act, RIPPA, computer misuse, terrorism, official secrets, aiding and abetting and conspiracy to misfeasance, misconduct in a public. There are a whole range. I'm a civil lawyer, and nowadays I'm spending a lot of time going, oh, God, is there a crime lurking somewhere in what we're doing? So, you know, I just leave you with that thought. It's actually a really, really complicated place to work and operate these days. And what we want is clarity. And at the moment, it seems to me, what we've got is an enormous amount of uncertainty, which is not good for a vibrant press to operate in. Thank you very much.